Today's episode of Market Talk is brought to you by Growmark FS. Keeping up with the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic grain and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up to date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next. The views and opinions of this program are those of the host, guests, and callers. There is substantial risk of loss in trading futures and options, which you should carefully consider prior to trading.
Bringing you the ag information you need, this is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
Thanks for tuning in to Market Talk, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Mike Pearson, sitting in this week for Jesse Allen while he is off celebrating his honeymoon. Well, not a lot for the wheat market to celebrate today in the world of commodity trade. Joining us now for an update on the markets is Garrett Toy of Ag Trader Talk. And Garrett, looks like wheat's taking it on the chin again. What's going on?
It is, but there is some signs here. It's technically, it's a volatile market down here against these lows. We've had 2 days in a row where we've had rallies. We've had buying under the 605 level in Chicago wheat the last three sessions. Even though we're down 10 to 15 cents today, it's still technically an inside day, so we're not really doing any technical damage. And when we have a market that may be, I don't want to say we're technically bottoming in here, I think we're seeing some stochastic recovery in here because we're extremely oversold. But I think that we might have found a level here where there's some interest at the $6 level, and the market's not really willing to depress these areas lower. Now, the interesting thing really is today is this Kansas City wheat market is I don't see any real changes. There's some forecasts that have some rain out in them, but I don't see anything really changed in Kansas City. We're still, I would like to see a test of this $8 level before we potentially put in, can say that we're trying to forge a bottom in here, at least short-term bottom. But we're not there yet. And I like to see a little bit more from the charts.
Garrett, as I watch this move to the downside, as you mentioned, still an inside day. I'm glad you said that. I was watching this just looking, ooh, that does not look pretty. But I'm seeing green on the screen in the corns. Is this a spread trade day?
It is a spread trade day. It's we're a commercial hedge desk. We work with farmers. We work with grain elevators. It's been very quiet. Nobody's really doing a whole heck of a lot. The spread activity, I don't see a lot of consumer pricing in here. Contacts I've talked to throughout the industry, it's quiet out here. The July SEP spread is taking off. That's supporting the July DEES as well. July SEP's up 7 cents. It's traded a 64 to essentially 74 cent range today. I think it's a bit of a short squeeze, to be honest with you. Domestic cash is still fairly strong out here. I think people got short the July SEP when China came in and canceled those 800,000 tons of corn over the last 3-4 weeks, and maybe got a little bit, got a little bit negative in here. But I think this market is just kind of recovering, a reversion to the mean trade, if you will, because I do think that purge in the corn market is over for now. It's not like the bean market where, the bean market is transitioning. We had a big long in that market, and that market, whenever you get a rally, it gets hit. The bids get hit because I think this money market long is still trying to liquidate. And until they get right with the world, that's the way it's going to be for now, it feels like.
Garrett, could there be another purge ahead of us in corn as this big Brazilian safrinha crop rolls onto the market? I understand those combines are starting to move down there in that country. Are you still anticipating a big crop?
Yeah, we are for the most part. It's a big country, and you have to remind that from north to south, the south will be the later stuff. I read a comment where, I think it was Agri-Consult yesterday, where they raised their production estimate for the safrinha crop, that they still said that there's 20 million metric ton of that crop that is at risk or has potential to have risk. If you look at the southern areas of Paraná, Mato Grosso do Sul, Sao Paulo, They're not necessarily, I mean, they're dry for lack of a better, I mean, there's no other way to put it. They're dry. They're not getting a lot of rain. The Mato Grosso crop, I think, is mostly made. And I think you've heard a lot of whisper numbers, but maybe people are starting to back off of that. That's going to be a long tail, though. As we've talked to customers, Brazilian corn, Taiwan bought a cargo today. It's still $20 a ton cheaper than U.S. corn out through August, September, October. It's going to be another harvest gut slot time period where we're probably not going to have a big export program this year because of the Brazilian corn crop, last year because of high freight costs. And that's not a great position to be in.
No, it certainly isn't, Garrett. But we've got an interesting position developing here over on the livestock side. We've got corn up 10 here in July. We've got feeders up a dollar here in the August. We've got strength in both live and feeder cattle. Do we have new information here in the cattle complex?
I have not seen it. I mean, everything is reversed. I mean, even you know, feeders are down a dollar. They're up a dollar now. Even fats are up anywhere from 80 to $1.80. This front end fats, see here. We trade new contract highs here. So I don't know what caused this reversal. It's a big bullish engulfing candle here because we took out yesterday's lows and then came back roaring right back. So that's an interesting development. I don't know. I haven't checked. What is today? Wednesday cash trade. It's a little early for cash trade, but definitely an interesting reversal here in the cattle market that is pretty impressive.
Garrett, are you getting nervous at all here with this cattle market? We're now in its fourth or fifth week up in record territory. Are there still more legs under this market in your mind?
I wake up every morning and I pinch myself as a cattle feeder. We are in position to have a very good year as cattle producers. But what I've been telling customers is that we had a dollar and a half, $2 break in beans. We had a dollar break in corn. Yes, the fundamentals are friendly in cattle here. But if we think that the cattle market is immune to the purges that we've seen in the grain markets, we're kidding ourselves. And I think that every cattle producer that I talk to, in fact, today we talked about before this reversal, we made the comment about, maybe it's time to look at some hedging just because of the fact that we kind of rejected those highs. I still think you're okay here if you want to start doing some hedging, but I think that every cattle producer I talk to is looking over their shoulders, wondering, we're cautiously optimistic this front end, but we're waiting for the other shoe to drop and we don't know when that's going to happen. It's a matter of if, not when, or when, not if, rather. But I think we're all very nervous, if that makes sense.
Garrett, are these deferred months getting you the opportunity to manage any of this risk? Are you taking advantage of any of these prices offered in either live or feeders later in the year, or are they just not up to where they need to be quite yet?
No, I think these are profitable levels, especially considering the break in corn. This break in corn has given us a lot of opportunities to lock in the crush. Whether you do that via options or if you have a progressive crop insurance agent where you can do a LRP type contract, there's multiple ways. We have a customer this week that did some LRP on some fall some fall feeders, if that's the worst case scenario, he's going to make a lot of money, and that's the worst case scenario. I mean, it's basically a put option in here. So if the market keeps going higher, it's just money in the bank.
Folks, we've been talking with Garrett Toy of Ag Trader Talk here today. Garrett, thank you so much for taking the time to join us and share your insight.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Folks, stay here. Market Talk will return in just a moment. We're going to hear from Steve Meyer at Partners for Production Agriculture.
Market information that matters to you on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
On Wednesday, National Hog Farmer Magazine held their fifth annual Global Hog Industry Virtual Conference. This was a gathering of professionals throughout the hog industry focusing on different aspects of that sector. There were conversations around the pork market looking ahead to 2023. Lots of conversation focused on the reaction to the Proposition 12 decision by the Supreme Court of the United States here this past week, and a look at swine health concerns, not just domestically, but globally. For Market Market Talk today, I felt it was relevant that we hear from the experts who talked about the pork industry and the outlook they had for the year ahead. On today's Market Talk, we'll hear from Steve Meyer of Partners for Production Agriculture next, looking at his insight here into the hog industry specifically. And then in segment four, we're going to hear from Joe Kearns, also from Partners for Production Agriculture. Both of them spoke to the attendees at the Global Hog Industry Virtual Conference. Here was Steve Meyer.
First, let's start with Prop 12. That's the big issue that has been taking front and center stage the last several days. On May 11th, Supreme Court of the United States held 5-4 that Prop 12 did not violate the Dormant Commerce Clause of the Constitution, and thus the district court in California was correct in throwing out a lawsuit by the National Pork Producers Council and the American Farm Bureau. And so that means that Prop 12 stands. It's the law of California. It was enacted on January 1st, 2022. That's when it became in force. And that date was the day that the definition of housed in a cruel manner, and I can't tell you how much I loathe that term, became effective. A California district court later delayed enforcement of the law first until 180 days after the initial final publication of the rules, and then they delayed it to July 1. So the only thing that was delayed in that decision was enforcement, not that it becomes effective. So that means that come July 1 or July 2nd, I guess, is a Monday, all the products sold in California must meet Prop 12 requirements. Unless efforts to delay, and those are going on right now, are successful. And there are talks about this. And, obviously producers and packers would like to have this delayed some and to get it back enacted very smooly. There are interests in California that would like to delay it too, because come that day, there's going to be a lot of empty pork shelves in California, and that may not be politically popular. The market impact, in my judgment, is that on July 2nd, 5-8% of our production, California accounts for about 10% of our production, must find another market. And obviously that has some implication to prices. I will tell you that when I talk about any prices here, those impacts are not included in my forecast yet. If we look at what's going on in profitability, we had a good 2021, a bad 2022, and a much worse 2023 on the way. You can see estimated profit and loss per the Iowa State estimated cost and return series parameters, minus $27 for this year. That would be the worst year on record if it comes to fruition, and there's not a lot of reason it won't at this present time unless we have a real change. The big reason, or two big reasons, is higher cost. You can see the box on the left, $95 for this year, $92 for next year. And that's in this model. This model is not the average producer. It's probably the low-cost 25% of the producers out there. We think the average producer is $6 to $8 higher than that. So above $100 break-evens this year, last year, close to $100 for this year. You do notice that we get some help out there a little ways. If we go into 2024, here's the cost part of that chart. The week May 12th future, that should be 19th. I changed the numbers. 515 and 365 corn and soybean meal imply 2024 cost near $84, which is a lot better than where we are now, but it's still 30% higher than we were pre-2021. Joe's going to talk more about costs later, so I'll leave it at that. Suffice to say, we don't think this is going down a whole lot beyond that, and we'll see what happens in the short run. On the demand side, the other factor is much softer demand recently. We had record high demand in 2021. This is real per capita expenditures for beef, pork, and chicken. Turkey is not included because I don't have a good retail price from USDA. But still, you can see the wild fluctuations around the COVID shutdowns. Then strong demand in 21, even stronger demand in 22. But look at the last few observations in that chart. They've gone down pretty precipitously. And, we can see this very clearly, I think, in retrospect. But really, the driver here was money. This is real personal, disposable personal income. This is after tax on a per capita basis, deflated. I mean, it's actual dollars per person out there. And you can see the big spikes in 2020 and 21 with the stimulus payments, lots of money in people's hands. Normally, historically, I've not been able to get income to be a good predictor of prices, but this kind of increase certainly had an impact. And you can see it softened dramatically last year. Some improvement as we've gone through the second half of 22 and into 23. And what was interesting is a lot of that money got saved. I mean, in 20 and 21, look at the savings. This is personal savings in the country. And it went from, you know, somewhere around $1.5 trillion up to $6 trillion at one time. Huge increases, but it's also all gone. So this is what happens when you hand people a lot of money and they don't have any place to spend it, or very few places to spend it. And so we had lots of money in the out there. You couldn't spend it a lot of places. It looks like it got spent on meat or food was one of the places it got spent. And what that's caused is the money that's put into the economy caused really drove inflation by its impact on the money supply. Of course, interest rates have been jacked to try to control inflation. And the combination of all of this has been a tremendous reduction in consumer sentiment. In fact, mid-2022 is the lowest observation in the history of this University of Michigan data series. And we've improved a bit, but we're still below 70, where normally this number ran somewhere in the 90s in much more normal times back before COVID came along. So still a soft consumer sentiment out there. And if you look at species by species, real per capita expenditures, the left is pork. We were down, we started dropping below year ago levels back in August. Those numbers have gotten progressively larger, except for January, really. And we were down 13% from a year ago in March, 7.7% so far. But as you can see on the right, we're not alone. The beef demand index has gone down double digits most of the second half of last year and is still in that mode right now. Chicken looks pretty good, but they were plus double digits the second half of last year. And if you think about money, which one, if you were running out of money, do you think you would have strong demand for? It would be the lowest price one in my mind, and that would be chicken. And so we saw strong chicken demand the second half of last year, soft on the others. And now you see that chicken demand itself is actually falling as well. So a soft situation on the demand side. If we look at supplies, this is the amount of product per capita that will be available to consumers. It's going to be down a bit this year. Most of that reduction is in beef. Pork is a little bit lower. I'll show you that in a moment. But notice that we're still hanging right in here around this 220 pounds per person range. Now back in the 2000s, 2008, 9 to through 13, I was concerned that we wouldn't ever push this back up. We had cultural things going on, meatless Mondays, all the animal welfare situations. But when we brought costs back in line and offered reasonably priced product to American consumers, they've eaten about 220 pounds of it. And I think that's going to continue for the foreseeable future. It does look like consumer level pork demand is falling back down toward the pre-2021 level. So it's clearly softened. That's certain for pork and beef. It's kind of beginning for chicken. The most likely driver, I think, is transfer payments that we saw during the pandemic and now the absence of those transfer payments. What can help pork demand? Well, remember the factors that drive demand: taste and preferences, competitor prices, complement prices, not so much. I mean, that's a theoretical construct, income levels. So beef prices, we think, will help at some point. We're going to start retaining heifers, and an already strong beef market is going to get stronger depending on when this heifer retention begins and they get pulled out of the market supply. Chicken prices may help some. The high costs that they're facing right now have to be covered. Tyson's earnings statement a couple of weeks ago got a lot of press, and rightfully so, because they were losing money on everything, including chicken, because of these high costs. Finally, incomes and consumer attitudes are improving, but slowly. I think we're kind of climbing out of this this hole on income levels. I believe the consumer attitudes are positive, but I don't see a lot of help on the consumer demand side of the rest of 2023.
That was Steve Meyer of Partners for Production Agriculture looking ahead to the pork industry in 2023 at the Global Hog Industry Virtual Conference today. Stay tuned. We're going to have Mike Adams talking with Arlen Suderman here when Market Talk returns.
stay up to date and listen to past episodes online at markettalkag.com. Now, back to Market Talk with Jesse Allen.
Welcome back, folks. Mike Pearson sitting in for Jesse Allen today. Next up, we're going to hear from Mike Adams. He's sitting in as host of Agriculture of America. And this morning, he spoke with Arlen Suderman about what's moving in the markets.
We're joined now by Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist for StoneX. Always good to talk with Arlen. We cover a lot of ground. Arlen, how are you?
Doing well, Mike. It's good to see you again.
Good to be back with you as well. All right. So we got this budget situation where the debt limit and all this, they're going right down to the wire. They can't even decide really what the deadline is, let alone what they're going to do about it. But this really impacts everything, doesn't it? I mean, when we're talking markets, we're talking the economy, we're talking about everything impacted by this.
It really does. And the assumption is still, I mean, we've done this, 22 times before. So the assumption is it's going to happen. But we've never been as partisan as what we are today. And it's largely a reflection of Congress. So the leadership is very partisan because the people behind them are very partisan. And it makes it even much more difficult to get an agreement down the middle because there's not many people left down the middle anymore. You know, Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill were very far apart, but they used to regularly socialize together to maintain a relationship, and they were able to work things out. We don't see that in Washington anymore. And therein lies the concerns in Washington and in Wall Street is they're playing with fire here. We're very close to the deadline. And what happens if there's a mistake that happens because they've called it too close? Now, in any negotiation, you get your greatest leverage right ahead of the deadline, and that's the way both sides are doing, but we don't want an accident. But my greater concern is beyond this. You know, we may get a credit rating reduction out of this if we get too close to the deadline. We saw that in 2011. That raises interest costs on both public and private debt. That increases costs for all of us. That includes farmers out there with operating loans. So that's a concern. But longer term, if we stay on the path that we're on right now, we will have $42 trillion worth of debt 4 years from today. And the interest on that debt, the annual interest payment on that debt will be $1.7 trillion per year, which is as much as is projected they will be spending on Social Security per year, as much as they will be spending on Medicare per year, and more than we'll be spending on national defense. That's unsustainable. And I'm not trying to be political here. I'm trying to get to the economic implications. That can't stand. So the only solutions are to raise taxes dramatically, and that is a harm to the economy, to cut spending dramatically, and neither party of Congress has shown a willingness to make those kind of cuts, or to monetize the debt. And that devalues the dollar sharply and is inflationary to commodity prices, probably looking at some combination of those three things. That's just 4 years from now, so that'll probably start coming to a head right around early 2025 or so, right around the presidential elections. Something to keep in mind that'll have an impact longer term on these markets.
Well, therein's the problem. All the solutions that you just offered are things that people don't want to do. We don't want to raise some of us don't want to raise taxes, and I guess there are some that are pushing for that. But you know, raising taxes is unpopular. Cutting spending, if we say cut spending, unless it's what we're wanting, you know, what we're getting, so we don't want that cut. So it's hard to come up with a solution to this.
Yeah, it really is. And when you have zero interest rates, which we had for a number of years, that's the mess we get ourselves into, because we could borrow, and it didn't cost us much because interest rates were near zero. And even at the consumer level, we built up a lot of consumer debt at that level as well. now that interest rates are going up, and we heard J.P. Morgan's CEO Jamie Dimon say this week, be prepared for the possibility of 6 or 7% interest rates. And I agree with him that that is a possibility. And so that's just going to inflict that much more pain on the debt that we've been accumulating during this long period of zero interest rates.
Isn't it safe to say that whatever they come up with, and I think they will come up with some kind of a deal, almost have to, it'll be more kicking the can down the road. And it just, you just wonder how much longer can we do that?
Yeah, it's going to be time to pay for that can getting kicked down the road here in the next couple of years. And that is going to have implications for the markets.
Talking with Arlen Suderman with StoneX. All right, we have planning progress numbers out. We know there are weather concerns out there, but the markets have not been exactly robust, certainly as of late. What's the mindset here? What's the driving factor behind the markets?
Well, the overall, the assumption is that everything's fine. We've taken out the war premium. And I say everything's fine. Everything's fine as far as supply and demand, having enough supply to meet demand, because the market believes that we're going into recession. It's been worried about that for the last year, and it's been trading the assumption that in a recession, there's lower demand for commodities, which is more true of some commodities than for others. So it's looking at supply and demand within that light. There are some significant risks to that, but the market doesn't care about those right now. More specifically, it doesn't really care about the risks that are in the Black Sea, and I think those risks are probably greater now than they've been at any time during the war. There is growing dryness in the Midwest. That is typical when you start an El Nino. You tend to have a drier June. I put out in the my client commentary yesterday, looking at the analysts, log years of switching to an El Nino, what June tends to look like. And it does tend to look drier in the heart of the Midwest. But then we get an active thunderstorm activity that starts up sometime in the last half of June, typically into July and August, that gives us our moisture. We get milder temperatures, northwesterly flow out of Canada, and we do tend to get good crops overall. And that's what the market is assuming at this point. And so the pattern right now is the path of least resistance is lower. Rallies are being sold until something changes those dynamics.
Yeah, I mentioned that earlier this week on Monday. I said markets, traders assume a good crop until they're absolutely proven that it's not there. They're going to assume it, right?
Yeah, and we need to remember that it's not just us being the big boys in the world market anymore, that Brazil trades off the Chicago market as well. And I've done a couple meetings with Brazil producers here over the last 10 days or 2 weeks, and they're undersold on their production. And so they, too, are very worried, and they're looking for rallies to sell. So that's that much more production. In fact, their Safrinha corn crop, which looks to be over 100 million metric tons right now, normally they'd be about 45 to 50% sold on that crop, which they're just starting to harvest the very early fields of that now. But this year, they're only about 30% sold. And so they're looking for those rallies sold as well. And that just makes it that much more difficult to sustain rallies.
All right. I want to talk to you about China. You're well connected there. You have people on the ground there that you're in constant contact with. We know about the political tensions between the U.S. and China. But what's going on behind the scenes, their economy, their society, the policies that are going on there that we should be aware of and watching?
Their economy is really struggling. Coming out of COVID, the expectation was that their economy would be unleashed. But they have a similar problem to what we've battled in this country, a lack of consumer confidence. So their consumers have been willing to spend things on services and convenience, but not big ticket items. So that means car sales, you know, things that cost durable goods, so to speak, as well as land and property. And property is a big part of their economy there. Really been slumping and kind of getting worse. This presents some real challenges to the leadership of China right now. because as the consumer spending less, their income is going down, the labor situation, unemployment's going up, that means their local governments have less revenue to operate off of it as well, so they're running into some deficits. There's a cry for stimulus, but they don't have money in order to do stimulus. They can print money, absolutely, but if they stimulate at a time when we're tightening, that tends to weaken their currency. And weaken their currency at a time when they're trying to have their currency seen as the strong one versus the dollar to replace the dollar. So they're facing a little bit of a challenge, and their geopolitical challenges from the West are increasing as well. For a while, they had the momentum being seen as a leader in the world. But now that momentum is tending to switch, and more countries are starting to stand up to them, kind of joining the United States, and that's creating some problems for them as well.
And in Taiwan, that's a situation to always watch.
Absolutely. That continues to be a threat. They do not want to have a military conflict over Taiwan, but if they feel threatened or pushed to it, they will do it, and they have promised that they will take action to take control of Taiwan, and that'll certainly trigger a response from the West.
Arlen, always good to talk with you. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist for StoneX.
Thanks, Mike, for sharing that conversation with us, and always appreciate Arlen Suderman taking the time to share his insight. Folks, stick around when we return Joe Kearns from Partners for Production Agriculture.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
Mike Pearson in for Jesse Allen this week. At the Global Hog Industry Virtual Conference, Joe Kearns of Partners in Production Agriculture spoke as well, and he discussed the biggest issue for the grain markets.
The biggest concern we have in the market is what's going to happen with some dryness. Now, here we sit, today's May 24th. Tomorrow is the final corn planting date for the Dakotas. Now, they've made some really good progress over the last couple of weeks as far as weather is concerned. And more than likely, the weather forecast that we have favors the soybean planting. But specifically, if we dial into corn, and in the month of February, you had nearly $6 posted on December corn for the February calculation period. Someone that had opted for the 85% coverage finds themselves in kind of the what I call the Alfred E. Newman scenario. Like, what? Me worry? Why would I worry about this? If I don't put the crop in the ground, I actually get paid more. Now, there's some social pressures that come along with this, and also that if my neighbors planted the crop and I can't, what does that say about me as a farmer? So there's some pride involved here, but there's also some practical application of just how hard did you try to get that crop in the ground if all of your neighbors were able to do so. So these are kind of the items that the market is wrestling with at this point in time. And as you can see, North Dakota is woefully behind schedule. The balance of the nation on aggregate is well ahead of schedule, 7 to 10 days ahead of schedule as far as corn planting is concerned, with the Dakotas really being our only problem child. And with that added acreage that we're anticipating, that's more than likely going to go away. And so a relatively loose balance sheet that the USDA gave us last week for the 23-24 crop probably gets snugged up just a little bit because of the loss of acreage. And then, of course, we'll take a peek at what does production look like rolling forward. So what's about prices? Back in 1992, the raging Cajun gave us a kind of an iconic component here about it's the economy, stupid. And so when we talk about what's going on with prices, it's where is the money flow? And that's all you need to know. And so the funds initially saw this great planting progress going on, and we had a lot of sales pressure coming into the markets. Pushed us down below $5 on December corn for a while, and that was a level that we thought at least was not that it couldn't be realized, but certainly at the time of the year that we were realizing using it was going to be very difficult to sustain. And that has proven to be true. We've rallied 25 or 30 cents so far as we continue to evaluate. Here's what we're looking at now. And these are where the funds are starting to reverse course. And I'll go through the 6 to 10 day and then the extended forecast where we've got a lot of confidence. This particular chart, and I'd like you to focus on specifically the Dakotas, is why I have a heck of a lot of confidence that we're going to see the soybean crop get put into the ground in a relatively timely manner. The temperatures are going to warm up. We're going to be very, very pleasant. And our opportunities for moisture largely stay confined to the west. Now, Dr. Meyer had spoken of the heifer retention in those plain states once we get a rebuilding of pasture. And that does look to be on the horizon here. I was just down in Texas here earlier this week. We flew into some pretty good storms at that point in time. Probably too late to save the wheat crop. Certainly beneficial to the pasture crop. And we'll see what that does for heifer retention rolling forward here. The extended forecast that'll take us into the first week of June is very similar. It almost seems as what we've got is relatively firmly entrenched. And there's another weather phenomena that we don't talk a lot about. It's called a Pacific decadal oscillation. It's kind of a mouthful. And we're at the largest negative reading. A negative PDO would bring weather that we've had for the last couple of years, i.e. Dry conditions across much of the western portion of the United States. Still too early to tell which was going to dominate, whether it's going to be the ENSO event or the PDO event, but we're going to keep our eye on this. My point to all of this weather components, and by the way, I'll give you the, here's what the moisture looks like. And again, this is your Labor Day weekend and beyond. You can pretty much smile if you're anywhere east of the Missouri River, because you're going to have pretty good conditions with a few exceptions in there. And even though